Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Kabaza, and for today, it is a Friday, which means we sort of get into some of the harder economics, topics, finance issues out there in the world. And, you know, for today, we are looking at the cryptocurrency markets and specifically, you know, what do they mean within the context of regulation? Because as these digital currencies are gaining more and more traction in and around the world, they are attracting, you know, a lot of interest from government. So that's the conversation that we're going to be having. And to help us to unpack all of the issues, we are joined by Saleh Salam, who is a portfolio manager with Old Mutual Investment Group. And he's actually saying that cryptocurrency has largely escaped regulation to date, but it's popularity actually continues to attract huge speculative investments on its price, which is now sitting at $1.7 trillion to date, in the hopes of making quick riches. However, those days appear to be numbered as governments around the world, including South Africa, look to regulate this largely unconventional asset class. So that's the conversation we're going to be having. Saleh, greetings to you today.
Hello, good day, and nice to be with you, Mudiwa.
We always want to get a sense of the people that we are talking about, you know, just as we get into the discussion. So yourself as a portfolio manager, Old Mutual Investment Group, maybe you can just give us a little bit, a little bit of context just around, you know, where you are coming from.
So I'm a senior portfolio manager at Old Mutual Investment Group, which is a part of Old Mutual. And as you're well aware, Old Mutual has been part of the fabric of South African society for past 175 years or so. And of course, part of this role means that we are fiduciaries. So we take our fiduciary responsibilities absolutely seriously. And as part of that fiduciary responsibility, it ultimately entails that we need to look at the risk and reward of the potential investment opportunities that are open to us in terms of the various mandates that we run.
Now, because you guys are a financial institution that's been around for as long as you guys have, the industry, traditional players have been accused, institutional investors have been accused of not, seeing the light that is cryptocurrencies, and people saying that, no, you know, some of the old guys, they're slow to change, etc. So, you know, how do you respond when it comes to the cryptocurrency markets? Because everyone is so excited about what's going on, but, you know, our governments, regulators, as well as institutional investors have sort of been seen to be a bit resistant to what's going on in the crypto markets. But we have started seeing a lot of movement on both sides and institutional investors actually getting into the market. So from your point of view, is it necessarily a resistance, or is it more, guys, let's just stop, breathe, and realize what's actually going on the ground?
That's an interesting way of putting it. I think it's probably closer to the latter. Stop, breathe, and try and figure out what is going on here. And to try and answer that question in terms of what is actually going on here, we need to recognize that there are a number of sort of trends that have converged on this whole sort of phenomenon that we talk about, cryptocurrency. You've got an increased sort of move towards, if I can use the terminology, libertarianism, where people are pushing back against increased sort of regulation, in a sense, on the one hand. On the other hand, you've got the rise of concern around much higher government regulation. You've got concerns around central banks basically expanding their balance sheets quite dramatically, and what potentially that means in terms of being devaluing currencies around the world and inflation. You have those concerns. Then you've got concerns, as you potentially alluded to here, where traditional financial institutions have been set up typically as an intermediary between savers on the one hand and borrowers on the other hand. In the middle, you've got this financial industry. And what you now having seen is the rise of this concept called decentralized finance. And decentralized finance basically says that the traditional financial industry is being constructed where you've got savers and borrowers as two parties, and in the middle you've got a whole financial industry that have been structured to essentially act as a middleman between these two parties, these two groups. And now what you're finding is that different technologies and platforms and companies and new businesses are emerging around the world that are trying to connect the parties, your savers and your borrowers potentially, or your transacting parties directly without any middle party in between. And that is also, of course, a big trend that you are seeing. And of course, cryptocurrency is kind of squarely positioned at the intersection of all of these sort of mega trends that are currently underway.
So against that backdrop, Saleh, I'm just interested then, do you sort of see that this moment where we are now, because our cryptocurrencies have gone on for almost a decade in this largely gray area, people still trying to understand, just the basics of, what is blockchain, what is Bitcoin, etc. And a lot of people have profited, over that period. But as with anything else, especially in technology, we're now seeing a catching up. Of regulation, a lot of intermediaries now coming into the space. We're even seeing structured products around, Bitcoin's ETFs, etc., things like that. So do you sort of see that we've now reached that moment where the regulation is now coming to sort of put in the controls that people were trying to run away from anyway?
Yeah, that's also a very good question. Absolutely, you're right. If you look at the trajectory of cryptocurrencies and how they sort of grown over the last decade or so, I think you mentioned up front that the collective cryptocurrency industry is around 1.7 or so trillion dollars. So it has reached the size whereby regulators can no longer ignore it, given the size of the assets or funds that are basically deployed in this industry. So currently, of course, a whole host of regulators around the world are increasingly turning their sights onto Bitcoin and onto cryptocurrencies, and that certainly then means that, in terms of one of the trends that we've spoken about, this sort of trying to flee from regulation and government regulation is actually in a sense on its doorstep. It's actually on its doorstep, and you've seen the SEC recently mentioned, that they are going to increasingly sort of turn their sights onto cryptocurrency as an industry. You've seen different regulators around the world do the same. And that's because of just the concern that could potentially pose some kind of systemic sort of risk to the broader industry as a whole. So perversely, in effect, the very thing that you kind of run away from is kind of, like you say, materialized because it's hit such a critical mass. And this is quite an important point, in that regulation can have quite a significant impact upon any industry, and it's certainly one of the risks that face cryptocurrency investors. In that, you would have seen recently in the last sort of week or 2 weeks, just as an example, a change in Chinese government policy and regulation as far as the education sector or the tech sector has seen. The valuations of those sectors and Chinese companies basically collapsed quite significantly, impacting our market as well through companies like Naspers and so on. And that is, in a sense, a harbinger of what is potentially possible if regulators around the world increasingly tighten the regulatory screws on on cryptocurrency?
You know, what you're saying is actually quite pertinent, because looking at what happened with all of those online educators in China, the regulation was quite swift and unexpected, and we saw tanking, like you said, of Naspers. But more than anything else, now you have questions of such an influential country like China, right, making regulations like that in the education space. Who else in emerging markets or even in the Western world might follow suit? And that comes at a time when education is really on the rise, all of those things. So now I'm just thinking that coming back to the crypto markets, if hard enough regulation is to come in, the type of correction that we might see in the market might just be astounding. And I think that helps us to actually broach that topic of, because now there's a toss up between how far could Bitcoin have gone unwieldingly, versus is this a fad, could be curtailed later on when the regulators, because regulators always catch up. And they always catch up, and it's like, it's like the parent who comes in after some time watching a situation and says, actually, what you guys are doing, I think it needs to be changed A, B, C, and D. So from that point of view, do we sort of see cryptocurrencies as they currently are, as the fad, but in future moving more into this regulated space where they now become something that, you guys as institutional investors can actually take seriously?
I think that certainly the risks of regulatory intervention in some shape or form is definitely rising. You've had regulators around the world basically, in a sense, fire warning shots that they are going to increasingly turn their attention towards this industry. So what remains to be answered is exactly what level of scrutiny they're going to impose upon the industry. So that's one point to mention. And another issue to mention is that you need to try and understand the incentives here as well, in that Bitcoin or Ethereum or any of the other cryptocurrencies are essentially other forms of currency. And as such, they are competing against the yuan, they are competing against the rand, they are competing against the dollar. These are other competing forms of money in which cryptocurrency is engaging. And of course, regulators are going to, and central banks are going to take note. Is it a fad? I think there are some definitely important structural elements that one needs to be mindful of, that are definitely, I would say, have got more structural elements as opposed to fad elements in place. For example, the desire for privacy, the desire for the ability to not engage in counterfeit sort of transactions at all, right? The desire to be able to access an investment that is actually that has scarcity value. So you think now, for example, central banks around the world have issued, and the US, for example, has issued trillions and trillions of dollars worth of currency to try and support the economy on the one hand, but on the other hand, the concern is that in the long run, potentially devalues the currency and can have significant inflationary consequences. So investors in cryptocurrency are saying, look, we want to invest in something whereby, it's in a sense free of central bank policy. It's not subject to the whims and fancies of a central bank deciding to expand or contract their balance sheet at all. We don't want to be subject to that kind of risk. So all of these concerns are certainly very, very valid, concerns. But notwithstanding that, of course, there's also been a large element of speculative kind of fervor that has also impacted the crypto market.
I'm actually then interested, against the backdrop that you've just described, because, you know, largely unregulated, moving towards a regulated space, you know, at the same time we've got these runaway prices on Bitcoin, Ethereum, and even, you know, if you're taking some of the meme coins like Dogecoin seriously, you know, all of that action happening. As someone who's seasoned and has been in the industry for a while, you know, what had been, you know, as Old Mutual, what had been your view, you know, around this? Because I'm pretty sure that in terms of, you know, being a fiduciary for people's money, you sort of play in the listed space a lot of the time, and, you know, some of the more structured products. What had been the view around the cryptocurrencies up until, you know, the regulator started shining their lights on it?
So I think that my personal view is that cryptocurrencies are here to stay, and that given those mega trends that I'd spoken to, the desire for privacy, the concern around central banks sort of expanding their balance sheets willy-nilly, for example, risk of inflation, this desire for decentralized finance, the importance of blockchain technology as an actual technology sort of platform, those structural elements have got significant sort of validity. That being said, that doesn't necessarily mean that Bitcoin itself or cryptocurrencies itself is potentially a good investment. There are other ways of trying to in a sense capitalize, if you will, on those themes. For example, let me give you some examples, things that we would have considered. So we could have, for example, invest in companies like Visa or PayPal or Square that are creating cryptocurrency sort of payment mechanisms, right, on their networks. And in so doing, if we were to invest in these particular companies, we can get exposure, indirect exposure to the growth of cryptocurrencies, but in a way that is very risk calibrated, right? We can, for example, invest in a company like Nvidia, for example, which is the chip company. And so how does that sort of benefit from cryptocurrencies? Well, their GPUs that they manufacture, which is is basically mining. Used in mining, mm-hmm. right? We can do that, but at the same time, Nvidia is basically almost the go-to company in terms of AI and the rise of artificial intelligence, because their GPUs are being used in AI applications as well. So, or we can, for example, invest in companies like Coinbase, which is a listed company which has essentially a market for cryptocurrencies as a whole, as opposed to one specific currency. So you're not necessarily making a specific call on a given currency. You could also invest in, for example, companies like Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the CME Group, which is a financial market, derivatives market in the US that is offering as of the suite of products that allows investors to also access cryptocurrency. So when I invest in these sort of groups of companies in this Bitcoin, in the crypto ecosystem, if I can use that word, I can get access to the broader crypto theme, but I can do so in a way that's very risk calibrated. And that for me is quite attractive, without being exposed to the whipsaw kind of volatility that comes with investing in the actual sort of cryptocurrency itself.
I actually like the the rationale that you sort of put behind it, because there are all of those different developments that are happening in the crypto ecosystem that an investor such as yourself could actually go out into the market, look at the trend, where's the possible growth going to happen, and actually, you know, find ways to have exposure to it without necessarily having, but you know, using some type of a buffer between yourselves and, you know, the end cryptocurrency, sort of like a hedge. So it's really interesting from that point of view. And I think, you know, that could naturally make one ask about the evolution, you know, so to say, of, you know, of cryptocurrencies as a basket, right? I think you've mentioned it at different points, you know, the price is going up and down, you know, sort of like commodities. But at the same time, when you see the likes of Visa trying to put in payment rails around crypto, then people do pay for things using, you know, cryptos. So how do you guys sort of see it? Because this is sort of like asking someone, do you guys see Bitcoin competing with gold as a commodity or competing with the rand as a currency?
Yeah. You're asking me difficult questions.
You know what? One of the things that's been fascinating about today's discussion is because we've actually had a number of different crypto companies, including Luno. You know, the guys at Luno, the guys at Altcoin Trader, just, you know, leading us through, you know, the development of what's going on the trading side, you know, so to actually, you know, get into conversation with one of the, you know, large guys such as yourselves, it's actually quite interesting, because at the end of the day, we as consumers will probably largely have whatever exposure we have to that market through whatever products, you know, the likes of yourselves end up coming up with and the way that you guys shape, you know, your investment philosophies around these things.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, in terms of your comments around this, is it competing against currency? Is it competing against gold? It's competing against both of those, absolutely. I would also say that increasingly, as cryptocurrencies gain critical mass, as they have kind of eating the $1.7 sort of trillion dollar sort of space. And given that institutional investors, by and large, as a whole, have made very, very small tentative sort of allocations towards cryptocurrencies, you know, very, very small, the potential certainly is, if you had to argue a bull case for this, the potential is that as institutional investors increase their allocations to 1%, 2%, 3% of their asset pools, the demand for cryptocurrencies is likely obviously to shoot through the roof, and the prices can obviously go up quite significantly given a finite and fixed supply of coins in circulation, which is one of its very, very fundamentally attractive properties. So in a world where you've got abundance in terms of free money, in terms of, you know, where currently global interest rates are, that's essentially free money. Free money is looking for scarcity, actually. Any asset that is scarce, and in a sense, you're one of the poster childs for scarce assets is cryptocurrency, because there's only that amount that is in circulation and that will be mined. That then means then, obviously, in terms of scarcity value relative to the potential demand, just looking at the demand supply curve, you can see you've got fixed supply, but you've got potentially exponential demand. The bull case is actually that price could go up dramatically, even more than what you've seen it go up historically. But that needs to be counterbalanced, of course, against the very real risk of regulatory interventions. And as I said, just take a page out of what has happened in China to give you an idea as to what's possible in terms of volatility. So keep that in mind. And that's why I said, if you are going to enter into this, you need to look at it in a very risk-calibrated way. Look at the whole ecosystem. And as I said, some of the exposures could be counterintuitive, like NVIDIA as an example, right? that could be a way for you to get exposure to towards that theme, as an example, or through PayPal or Square or so on. And that's kind of the area that I suppose that we would be focusing on.
And it's actually quite great getting that getting that view of how someone can actually look at the market in a risk-calibrated way, and also at the same time trying to grapple with the fact that, you know, these cryptocurrencies can do, you know, so many different things and are competing or even in a sense challenging, you know, our traditional notions of what is a commodity, what is a currency, you know, and that type of thing. But in South Africa, maybe you can give us some insight just around, I think two things, you know, when it comes to South Africa, because I think when it comes to institutional investment, we've seen some of those 1 or 2% allocations happening in the West, you know, especially some of the more developed markets, you know. So in South Africa, how is the industry thinking around that? But conversely, you know, regulators, you know, where are we sitting? We know that the Reserve Bank, you know, says that they're keeping an eye on, but you know, behind the scenes, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, that sounds almost like the principal saying, "I'm keeping my eye on you, young man." Yeah, no, I absolutely. Regulators are definitely keeping an eye on it, and the South African authorities are obviously no exception to that. And then we've also seen, of course, concerns around fraud and or let's call it potentially shady dealings involving cryptocurrencies as well within the South African sort of landscape, as well as even the global landscape. And you can see then why regulators would be concerned. In addition to that, of course, in a post sort of 9/11 world, we've also seen the importance and the rise of things like KYC, know your client. We've seen the rise of this FICA regulation as well. You know, all of us have to constantly be FICA, you know, multiple times when we transact, because it's important to know who your counterparty is. And in a sense, one of the key reasons why cryptocurrencies are so valuable in the eyes of the crypto users, because it gives you this rock solid kind of almost privacy cover, if you will. But from on the other side, from a regulatory perspective, especially in a post 9/11 world, that's in fact one of the features that makes it unattractive. Because how do you do a KYC? How do you do a kind of a FICA on someone who is using crypto, right? And what we've also seen, of course, even in the South African landscape at the moment, I can't go out and go and buy a house and say, look, you know, here's my 100 sort of Bitcoin to buy your house. You're not going to accept that. Neither is your bank who's holding your bond. They're not going to accept that either. Okay, so it's not actually a form of, at this point in time within the South African landscape, unless we go a route of Ecuador as an example, it's not a form of legal tender. So banks can't accept it as a form of payment. In addition to that, given the sort of a risk framework that our banks have, where they've got, you know, they've got a whole certain sort of like risk weighted assets, you know, in terms of their regulations with the banking regulator, it's also unclear as to how Bitcoin would fit into that whole sort of, or cryptocurrencies would fit into that whole structure. If banks had to hold a certain amount of cryptocurrencies on their balance sheet, how would the regulator view that in terms of our risk weighting sort of framework as well? So there are lots of questions that need to be answered, and it's for this reason, of course, and amongst other, that Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are not accepted as a form of legal tender within the South African sort of payment payment network and system.
This conversation really does seem to highlight a lot of the ironies that we find ourselves dealing with at the moment. The first one we dealt with earlier on, to say that this is a space that has largely, you know, tried to run away from regulation, but we now find ourselves in a situation where there is potential that regulation could disrupt the market in a big way. And at the same time, we are hearing of a number of governments playing around with the idea of digital currencies, right? And I think for me, the big irony in that is that with the digital currencies, people like the anonymity of, you know, the Bitcoins, etc., you know, the ability to make anonymous transactions, not to be tracked. At the same time, cash itself is very hard to trace in people's hands, right? But now with digital currencies, it seems that, you know, governments, central banks would be able to literally track money all the way through a system as it goes through, you know, one account to another. Of course, you're reducing fraud and the ability to do, you know, shady things, but you're now sort of giving, I don't know what the word to use is, but the anonymity that people were trying to get sort of gets taken away, because now central banks will be able to trace everything that everything that happens.
Yeah, I suppose it's the law of unintended consequences. Mm.
So as we come to the end of the discussion, then I guess maybe, you know, your outlook or any, you know, parting shots just around, you know, this entire discussion. I think the pandemic period really brought cryptos to the fore. I don't know where that was, because people were sitting at home and they had time to actually sit and, you know, explore what's going on, or, you know, just that rebellion of saying that, you know, traditional financial systems didn't have our backs during this crisis. So I'm looking for something new. But where do you sort of see things going, just from someone who's keeping an eye on the space?
As I mentioned, I think cryptos are here to stay. They're likely to gain further sort of critical mass. Anyone who is potentially looking to invest in the space, of course, you need to be mindful that there's a strong bull argument for it, but be very aware of the bear argument, especially around the regulatory sort of risks as well. I don't necessarily see central banks and governments giving up their monopoly rights to be able to issue currencies to an external, nameless third party without a fight, right? So you need to keep that in mind. The mega trend around decentralized finance is also only likely to continue to gain traction as well. And I would say that look at the, let's call it, if you are interested in investing in the space, I would say explore the ecosystem as a whole, and see, you know, if there are potentially, as I'd mentioned, the risk calibrated ways of getting exposure to it, as opposed to investing directly in the specific sort of instruments. And all of this, of course, these are just my personal views, and it doesn't necessarily constitute, financial advice.
So you heard that there. We were talking to Saleh Salam, who is a senior portfolio manager at Old Mutual Investment Group, just giving us some insight into what's going on in the cryptocurrencies at the moment. He is just highlighting the fact that this space of cryptocurrencies, you know, alternative payments, whatever we want to call it, because, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, the trend is competing with so many, you know, different pieces of the traditional financial system. And he's saying that regulation, which is on its way, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. At this particular moment, he's just saying that when it does come, that it's likely to have a disruptive effect, especially if it's, at least from a severity point of view, if the case of China and and its regulation on education is anything to go by, it might have a disruptive effect. But at the same time, he's saying that, you know, guys, cryptocurrencies are here, right? They might not, you know, be a get-rich-quick scheme, right? But, you know, fundamentally, the technology and what they, you know, what they stand for and their impact on the future is probably going to be here for with us for a number of years. And just highlighting some of the ways that people can actually gain exposure without necessarily exposing themselves to, you know, the actual currencies. He's calling it a risk. You know, taking that risk adjusted view, you know, into it. What are the trends? Who's developing what? He highlighted the likes of Visa, the likes of Nvidia that are developing technologies and, you know, all of these things that could benefit from, you know, cryptocurrency. So maybe these are the ways that people should be thinking around all of this stuff. And, you know, I guess at the end of the day, you know, what's going to be the evolution? Will I be having a conversation with Saleh in about 2 years' time, you know, where we are able to buy a house with Ethereum or something like that? Or will there be a digital South African rand or something that would have, you know, now come into circulation? We just wait and see. Saleh, thank you so much for being with us today.
Pleasure speaking to Madira. Thank you so much.
This is Madira's Take.
Quite a fascinating discussion with Saleh just around what's actually going on in the market. And over the years, it's been interesting to see the development of the cryptocurrency space. And it will be one to continue to watch, especially now that your institutional investors as well as government have come in, you know, to the party, you know, offering their own takes on everything. So it'll be good to see what ends up winning out. Is it going to be the likes of Bitcoin, Ethereum, you know, the people that have, I guess, pioneered the space as we know it right now? Or are we going to see a winning out of the central bank-backed digital currency, such as the likes of which are being explored in places like the US, places like China? Where are we going to see that evolution going? The piece that I do agree with is that digital currencies, cryptocurrencies, blockchain technology, all of this, it's here, right? How it, you know, develops over time, you know, that's where we really need to be careful just around how all of that is going to happen. And if you look at, you know, let's look at the currency markets just in brief, because back in the day, we all know the stories that back in the day, people used to exchange value, literally exchange value, one good for another on a barter trade level. And then after some time, you began to develop all of these different ways to symbolize value, whether it was shells, and then, you know, coins, gold, etc. And then you had your commodified currencies that were, you know, backed by silver, backed by gold or something like that. And then now we find ourselves in a situation where, you know, perception and value, especially after the US dollar got off the gold standard back in the 1970s, you know, fiat currencies are sort of more driven by perception more than anything else. So you see that people seem to have this rebellious stance just around the state of the current financial system. So going forward, how is all of that going to develop? And the evolution of the fiat currency system sort of speaks to what we're saying, that right now we might be talking about Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, whatever it is that you're looking at, but who's to say that in a decade's time we might be seeing it in a different way? So we continue to watch the space, but it is, you know, very good and encouraging that the, you know, the institutional guys, you know, government, you know, they're coming to the party, because they were going to come to the party whether we like it or not, right? But how they come to the party, especially some of those, you know, risk adjusted ways that were being highlighted earlier on, you know, to say that, okay, fine, you might not necessarily get into a specific coin, but if there's another way that you can look at the market and, you know, know who's actually going to develop technologies that will drive up their own value. You know, all of those things are going to help to drive forward the investment case for the development of the space. So we wait and see. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.